Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 13 of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
Hey, everybody.
And we're going to be talking about new comics that are coming out this coming Wednesday, April 2nd. Did you see that, Dave? I knew what day of the week it was this.
You're getting so much better. What is this, the sixth podcast?
13th.
Really? We did 13? Lucky number 13, that's why you got it right.
Hence, welcome to episode 13 of the Tuesday Night Comics podcast.
I must have missed that.
That wasn't just a random number I threw out there.
I was not listening.
just like most of our audience. So, I'm going to start right off the bat with Dark Horse, because there are two comics coming out this week from Dark Horse. I think everybody should pick them up. The first being a book that you and I have been lucky enough to read already, which is Veil Number 2, which
is awesome.
Yes. New series by Greg Rucka and Tony Fajula. I am loving this series. It's just such a great mystery.
Yeah, and the second issue really starts building upon who Vale is and just makes you ask more questions. Great writing, awesome art. There's no reason you shouldn't be picking this up.
And Vale is not her real name. That is just... She read Vale on a sign when the guy found her. So we know nothing about this woman except that she's involved in some kind of arcane ritual and was discovered on the street.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting is that she repeats a lot of what other people say.
Yes.
Her dialogue is almost learned dialogue. And it reminds me of that HBO series, John from Cincinnati.
I never watched that.
Well, basically, there's a bunch of series because it never, there's a bunch of, theories about the series because it never finished and only had one season, but...
Yeah, it only ran for a few episodes, right?
It ran a full season, but then that was it. I think John from Cincinnati was the word of God, but I think how it worked was... whenever, he would only say things that people had said to him, and that's how he learned how to, talk to people. And the first time someone helped him, they thought he had, like stomach problems. And they're like, John, you need to dump out? And so from that point on, whenever he was trying to help somebody, he was like, you need to dump out?
That's really funny.
So just... How Greg Rucka is playing with the language in here kind of reminded me of that, but
yeah,
the one season is really great. I'd suggest watching it. I'm sure it's on HBO Go or available somewhere to stream.
Yeah, once I got my hands on HBO Go, I just wanted to go through every series on there. I'm currently on season 4 of The Wire. My next thing is just to dive through True Detective, and then after that, Boardwalk Empire. But I'll definitely add
John from Cincinnati.
John from Cincinnati to my list.
Yeah, it's not much of a commitment.
Yeah, the other book I want to talk about from Dark Horse is the $1 for $1 Itty Bitty Hellboy number 1. This is a reprint of Itty Bitty Hellboy number 1 by Art Balthazar and Franco. This is basically, if you were a fan of Tiny Titans, these itty bitty books that they do have just been terrific. It seems like they're just licensing out the concept but they're going to different companies and they're doing a Hellboy one. I think they've done a couple for maybe Image Comics, and it's just the Tiny Titans vein with, kids superheroes. And it's funny because Hellboy is such a, not a book that I would, give my 6-year-old nephew, but this would definitely be one I would.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, Art Balthazar, that's his art. He did a Wolf Boy series, I think that was from Dark Horse as well, before Tiny Titans, and it's all in the same vein, and it's all a lot of fun. And if you ever see those guys at conventions, they're really, their booths are always fun, and, I definitely suggest picking it up too.
Oh yeah, they're some of my favorite guys to see at conventions. Because they are happy to do sketches for fans. I think they charge the cheapest amount of money out of anybody in a convention. It's usually $5 for a sketch, maybe $10. I remember on Sunday when it was Kids Day, it was $1 for a quick sketch.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and Art Balthasar was at Midtown Comics last week for last Saturday for Hellboy Day. Unfortunately, I missed it, but he was doing free sketches that if you gave him like a blank Batman cover, he drew Batman and Hellboy. It was some of the cutest sketches I'd ever seen on Midtown Comics Instagram feed.
Oh man, I'd love a Batman Starman Hellboy.
Yeah, oh, that would have been tremendous.
The other book from Dark Horse that you should look at picking up is Fear Agent Volume 1. This was one of, I think, Rick Remender's first books with art by Tony Moore. And
Yes.
this is the second edition of this. But yeah, I highly remember. I highly recommend picking it up from everybody else's recommendations. I have not read it yet, but I definitely plan to.
Oh yeah, this is actually what's coming out is the Fear Agent Library Volume 2, right? Because it's the second volume of the Fear Agent Library Edition, which is printed on oversized paper. It's a hefty book because I have Volume 1, and
No, I
it
think
is a
th
huge
this is
book.
Volume 1. This is Fear Agent Volume 1, Reignition Trade Paperback, Second
Oh, okay.
Edition. So
I was looking at something else then.
I'm guessing maybe there was a hardcover, or maybe this is just the second time the trade paperback is coming out.
All right. Yeah, Fear Agent's a great series. I highly recommend everybody reading that one. But as everyone who listens knows, I'm a huge Rick Remender fan.
Yeah. When you said that there were two books from Dark Horse you were gonna recommend, I was like, all right, I know which two it is. It's Vale and Fear Agent.
Yeah, I totally didn't even see Fear Agent on my list of books coming out, or else that definitely would have made my recommendations list.
Yeah. So how about DC? You see anything from DC that
DC's
jumped
got a
out at
few
you?
cool books. You know, of course, we're both big fans of Earth 2. This looks like it's going to be a big issue.
Green Lantern's coming back. I really hope we start to see more of the Earth 2 characters that James Robinson had put on the Earth 2 rather than like Superman and Batman. Now you can get Superman and
Right.
Batman anywhere else, so I don't really love seeing them in Earth 2 as much. Not that I
I'll
don't
agree
want to
with you
see
on
them
that.
there, but like I'd rather, you know, Green Lantern, Flash, Adam, and the Earth 2 versions of them get more page time.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Unfortunately, it's, you know, evil Superman or mysterious new Batman is what brings in new readers.
Yes.
But I definitely agree with you. I'd love to see more of the traditional Earth 2 characters going forward.
Another book that's coming out this week is Detective Comics number 30, which is the start of Francis Manapul and Brian Buccellato's Batman run. They had just recently left The Flash, which they started up with in the when the New 52 began, and they are just a great team together, and I can't wait to see what they do on Batman.
Yeah, the cover to Detective Comics 30 looks really interesting. It's Batman battling either a giant squid or Cthulhu. Unless it's Starro.
That's definitely a squid. It looks like it's going to be a very colorful take on Batman. I mean, even though it looks dark, I can't see those guys shying away from the use of color, especially what they did with the Flash. But if you remember Greg Rucka's run on Detective Comics,
Right.
Sean Martinborough, I believe, was the artist, and they played with color really nicely with Batman, and they just did two colors in every book, just, you know, shades and tints of two colors, and it provided like a really cool palette for each storyline that went through Detective Comics.
Right. Also, yeah, I'm very excited about that. I really like that creative team. I love Francis Manapul's art.
Yeah, as soon as he started doing washes, he bounced. Like it took his art to another level. Before that, he was just doing basic pencil stuff, and you saw that he was working on the Legion before Geoff Johns took over with the reboot or unreboot and brought back the original Legion in the Superman books.
Right.
And I think he was working with Jim Starlin.
And he was doing Superboy too around that time too, right? Or was that afterwards?
That was afterwards. That was afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is definitely a creative team I'm excited for. I will be picking that up. We also have Aquaman and the Others, number one. Now, this is not a limited series. This is a new ongoing series, right?
Yeah, this is ongoing series, art written by Dan Jurgens and art by Len Medina and Edgar Tadeo.
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, Dan Jurgens, I think we've talked about this before. He's a serviceable writer, but
right.
I really like the Others in Aquaman, so I'm intrigued about this book.
Yeah, the Others storyline was my favorite storyline in the Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis Aquaman comic. I actually own a page of original art from that, how much I like that group.
Wow.
I almost feel like this is a bait and switch, though, because I associate it with Geoff Johns and Ivan. And Ivan's doing the cover. I feel like when I open up the book, it's just going to be, I'm afraid it'll be too different.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think John Ostrander wrote a piece with the Others in Aquaman. I don't know if it was a short story or if it was just a single issue.
Okay.
But it was fun, but it didn't have that same feel as the Others in Aquaman.
Right. Worth giving it a shot, though, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to pick up the first issue, see what I think about it. And I think that's really a bold move from DC, you know, throwing out two Aquaman books.
Yeah, when was the last time Aquaman had two series at the same time? Is this the first time ever?
I would say it is the first time ever. I mean, you could say there was a Tempest miniseries by Phil Jimenez in the late 90s that ran for four issues, but that's the most I'm going to give you.
Yeah, that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
Last
from DC that I see is Stormwatch number 30. I don't know if you know if that Stormwatch is still going on.
I thought this series was canceled 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, this is the last issue, so jump on now. But seriously, jump on now. The writer who's writing this is Sterling Gates. And Sterling Gates has never written an issue of Stormwatch up till now. And he's a great writer.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's too bad because he's a really good writer.
Yeah, if he was on this book before issue 30, maybe this wouldn't be the final issue. But this issue is actually leading into Future's End. So if anybody's looking to jump on that weekly series and get a couple hints of what might be coming in that series, I would definitely check out Stormwatch number 30. Not a big commitment. It's the last issue.
And also leading into Future's End is that Aquaman the Other series. I'm not sure how that's going to tie into it, but listed in the solicitation for is that it's leading up to Future's End.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give that a look as well.
Now, moving on to Image Comics, we have Black Science number 5 by Rick Remender and Mateus Galera. This series up there, like, might be in my top 5 series that are out right now. I'm loving this book. It's full of mystery, it's full of intrigue, great character development, it's got a really cool sci-fi element to it. I highly, highly recommend this book, and it's beautiful to look at.
The art does look pretty awesome.
The art, if you're a fan of Sean Murphy's art, then you will love Mateo Scalera's art.
Okay.
And that's really it for me for Image. Did anything from Image jump out at you?
I am waiting for it to be collected, but Pretty Deadly looks pretty interesting from Kelly Sue DeConnick.
I read the first issue. I was really hyped for it before it came out, and then after reading the first issue, it just didn't grab me enough to even go into the second one.
Oh, really? Yeah, I've read a few things of Kelly Sue DeConnick's, and I love her Captain Marvel stuff. I find that really interesting. I read a Sif one-shot that I really didn't care for. So I mean, but those are the only two books that she has written that I, you know, have read that I have mixed reviews of what I think of her.
Right.
Or her writing, rather. I'm sure she's a wonderful person.
Yeah. Now, there's a new issue of Black Widow coming out this week. Here's a really cool thing that Marvel did last week. If you bought last week's issue of Superior Spider-Man, Marvel included the entire first issue of Black Widow number one in that book. After Superior Spider-Man ended, you then had another full comic to read. They did not raise the
Wow.
price. It was still just a $4 comic, but you're getting two comics for the price of one. I'm really Marvel's been doing a really cool promotions to get people into their all new Marvel now, in that they've been doing the free digital comics of Ms. Marvel and Silver Surfer for their origin stories. And now here at Black Widow, they basically gave away the first issue for free to get people into that book.
Yes.
And if you and Superior Spider-Man is Marvel's best-selling comic, so that is putting that comic in front of a lot of eyeballs, and it's a great book.
Wow, that is pretty cool. And I'm sure they want it to stick around at least till Captain Marvel and then Avengers come out, because I'm sure they had a lot of people coming into the store saying, "I want a Black Widow comic." Oh, well, we don't have any of that.
This Black Widow comic looks like the most cinematic universe Black Widow that we've seen in the regular Marvel universe. If somebody was said to me, "I really like Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, give me a Black Widow comic to read," I'd point them right at this one.
Gotcha.
And also coming out from Marvel, one of my favorite books, She-Hulk number three. She's going to be dealing with Doctor Doom. You know you want to jump on this.
Maybe I'll read when there's a sale.
Oh man, you don't know what you're missing, dude.
I'm not saying it's a bad comic, it just didn't grab me. Inhuman number one comes out.
Now this is that's also written by Charles Soule from or Charles Soule from She-Hulk, with art by Joe Madureira.
I thought it was Madureira. Is
I
that
have no
right?
idea how to pronounce that name. I call him Joe Mad.
This might be on a schedule similar to Sandman Overture.
Yeah, I think that's a good guess right there. I'm guessing two issues of this will come out and then we'll never see it again. Or we will, but Umberto Ramos will be doing the art for it.
However, an interesting thing to note that this book somewhat ties into Ms. Marvel.
Oh, really?
Because you know how she got her powers from that mist?
Oh, right, because it's all like a post-Infinity story, right?
So she's technically an Inhuman, because this is what I guess is making these heroes, this Terrigen mist. I'm not too hip on what the Inhumans are. I've read a bunch of Fantastic Four this past year, and I still am not too certain what the Inhumans are.
So
After reading like about 70 issues of Fantastic Four.
that's funny. That just shows how dense Jonathan Hickman's writing can be sometimes. The Inhumans are basically an offshoot of the human race that they millennia ago, back when we were still cavemen, the Kree came to Earth and experimented on some proto-humans and evolved them faster and differently than regular humans, to the point that when we were still evolving, the Kree came back, took the Inhumans, and moved them to like a separate area and kept them separate from humanity. And that's what has grown into the Inhumans. You'll notice how they all look different and have different powers. And that's because they start out in life pretty much like a normal person, but when they go through puberty, they have this ritual. This was all covered in the Paul Jenkins Jay Lee series from the early 2000s. They go through this ritual where they go through the Terrigen Mist, and that's what gives them their powers. And it's almost like a mutant gaining his or her powers, in that you don't know what your mutation is going to be. You might have hair that can grab people. You might have a voice that can shatter the moon.
All right. Yeah, I kind of got that much from the Hickman books, where like I understood that, that they were like an evolved human race in some type of way that the Kree had experimented on, and I didn't understand how the mist played a part into that when I was reading Ms. Marvel or the solicitation for this. However, it is pretty interesting that they're kind of like they were like mutants, better mutants before X-Men was cool.
Kind of, and they've lived all over.
They're like the hipster mutants.
Yeah, and they've lived all over the place. They for thousands of years they lived in the Himalayas. Then they moved to the moon. They seem to Adalon, which is where they live. This city where they live seems to move around a lot between either the Himalayas and the moon. They like their seclusion.
Gotcha. Yeah, they were like, "Oh, you guys moved to L.A. That's the 1970s. We're on the moon."
Yeah.
Or the Himalayas.
One or the other.
Yeah.
And then we also have Ultimate Spider-Man number 200. I haven't been keeping up with Ultimate Spider-Man. I think I fell behind around issue 10 of the new series. But I have to say, it's cool that it's reaching a milestone.
Yeah, so this is where Marvel does this every now and again, where they add up all the Ultimate Spider-Man issues, even if they had stopped and started and said, this is the 200th issue.
Yeah.
That would be out if we had the numbering the same for the whole time.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it because I think they're also counting some Ultimate like mini series that came out too,
like
as part of the
Spider-Man.
Numbering. Yeah. It's quasi math that they do, and it's totally a sales gimmick.
Yeah.
I won't be picking this up just because I'm so far behind. So there's really nothing that I'll get out of it.
Yeah, I dropped out when the last, or it was two crossovers ago, where I guess Captain America became president and there was like some big war or whatever, and I was like, this is not why I'm reading Ultimate Spider-Man. See you later, Miles Morales.
Yeah, that's the complaint I get from a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man fans. I was talking to our friend Nick about this, and he had the same complaint. He's been reading Ultimate Spider-Man since issue number one, and every time there's one of these, you know, whole Ultimates wide universe crossovers, that's when things kind of like get bad. And I felt the same way when Ultimatum came out. I was like, I'm not interested. Just give me Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah. Another Spider-Man related book that's coming out is Amazing Spider-Man Family Business, hardcover by Mark Waid and James Robinson.
Is that out this week? Wow.
Yeah, it's an original graphic novel. It's Peter Parker has a sister. So that should be interesting.
That should be really interesting.
I'm looking forward to the artwork in there. At least the cover is pretty cool looking.
Who's doing the art?
Gabriel Del Otto and Del Edera. Oh, Werther Del Edera. Sorry for butchering your name.
If anyone is doing, I'm sorry, if anyone is interested in getting into comic book writing or writing in general, they might want to pick up Captain America Winter Soldier number one director's cut. This is the first issue of Captain America by Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting from about 10 years ago, but it includes at the back of the issue Ed Brubaker's entire full script for the issue.
Yeah,
I find these things to be very educational. They're always fun to read.
They are fun to read. I think they are mislabeled, though, because they're not really a director's cut. They're like a writer's cut.
Yes.
But if anybody's doing directing in the comic book, it's the artist. And, you know, when you get a director's cut of the movie, I mean, that's more like, you know, how the director wanted the movie cut, as opposed to the editor, the unsung hero of cinematography.
Of cinema, yeah,
and yeah. So I think it's more like a writer's cut. They go through, you know, what they wrote, you know, what needed to be changed,
right.
You know, what they wrote to the artist. So it's very interesting to see how different writers write to their artist partners and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you completely about that. It is a bit of a misnomer.
Other than that, I think
the only other thing that jumps out at me is What If Age of Ultron number one, which, like the recent What If series, this looks like it may be a 5-issue miniseries. I have very few things to say about this other than because I'm still at a loss with Age of Ultron. I can't decide if I liked it or not because it completely changed after the third issue. It's a very strange story, and I almost made the joke. It's like, oh, what if Age of Ultron was actually good? But to be honest with you, I'm not sure if I disliked it or if I liked it. I might have to read it again, and I'm not looking forward to doing that.
Well, you know what? Let me know when you're going to reread it, because I have yet to read it, but I grabbed it on the sale that they had over the holidays. And I was you know, reading stuff fairly in order when I was reading all those Marvel books, and then I kind of got Marveled out.
Mm-hmm. And, I've never gotten Marveled out. I'm a Marvel zombie, I think.
So
I'm wearing a Spider-Man T-shirt right now.
I'm wearing a Batman T-shirt.
Ah, nice.
Yes.
It shows our allegiances.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Like, we both like books from both companies, but you're definitely more the DC fan. I'm definitely more the Marvel fan.
Yes, yes. I could quote obscure DC characters.
And I could tell you how the Terrigan Mist functions.
So,
speaking of Marvel books and how much I like to read them, let's talk about Silver Surfer number one.
First of all, gorgeous.
Yeah, but Mike Allred on art and Laura Allred, his wife, on colors. This book was beautiful, beautiful to look at, and I loved it. Like, I've said this before, it's the Doctor Who comic I've always wanted.
Yes, it was, and I do feel like I read both the Infinite comic. I actually read the Infinite comic before number one.
Okay.
And that seems to be set further in the future than issue number one, but I definitely
yes.
liked issue number one better than the Infinite
okay.
comic, but I think I would have liked the Infinite comic a little more if I read it after issue number one. So I would suggest to our readers, if they have not picked up, our listeners, if they haven't picked up number one yet, to read it number one, then Infinite comic.
Yeah, and what was really cool is Dan Slott was doing a couple of signings in New York City for Silver Surfer number one. So I was able to pop in during my lunch hour to J.H. Comics, formerly Jim Hanley's Universe in Midtown, and pick up signed copies of Silver Surfer number one and the new issue of Superior Spider-Man this past week. So that was the nice little treat for myself.
Yeah.
But I'm loving the series. This is up there with Ms. Marvel and She-Hulk for me. All new Marvel now. Marvel's hitting it out of the park right now.
They are. I mean, they've got great book after great book. I mean,
yeah.
Even the books I'm like, it's okay. Like She-Hulk, it's still a great book.
No, She-Hulk's a great book, dude. I don't know if it's just okay. I just said kicking it out of the park right now. This shows you how big of a comic book reader I am.
Well, maybe it was a soccer ball?
Yeah, maybe.
Which is a stadium. I don't know if you'd call it a park.
Yeah.
Now,
I also read a book that came out a few months ago. This is a prose book by Brian Michael Bendis on the Avengers. It's called Avengers Assemble, An Oral History of Earth's Mighty. You know, every other Avengers book that was at that time went in the back. It's basically like the Avengers on the Avengers. It was the characters talking about forming the Avengers. So you have like Wasp, Hulk, Thor, all talking in their own words. And it goes up, not through the present day, but up through like this Kree-Skrull war and shortly thereafter. But hints at what happens in the present day, because it's actually as if the Avengers of today are looking back on their time. It's a really cool book. And unlike what I found with a lot of Bendis writing, is the voices are very distinctive. Like, Thor is Thor, Wasp is Wasp. You know who's talking. It's not just like the snappy patter that you get in a lot of Bendis comics.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, because I feel like sometimes Bendis writes everybody as Spider-Man. Like, everyone is wisecracking.
Yeah. I get that same feeling from him in his team books, and I get that same feeling from Joss Whedon when I listen to watch some of his TV shows.
Oh, interesting.
Where it's like everybody's like got some quick quips.
Yeah. Well, what else did you read this week?
I read Silver Surfer, Vale, as we said, and then I read World's Finest, the latest issue of that, which is the fourth in the First Contact crossover between that book and Batman Superman. Odd thing is that the third part in that series, the Batman Superman issue, has mm-hmm. not come out yet.
That's
guessing annoying. Because it's of Jay Lee's artwork. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, it seems his art is pretty like labor intensive. So that's what I'm chalking it up to.
Right.
But I guess that's going to come out in a couple of weeks. But basically, you know, it jumped ahead, and I kind of figured it out. But yeah, they saw the evil Superman in Earth 2, and Kara was all, you know, upset about it, and he was, you know, trying to get Kara to come back to Earth 2 for part of his plan. And,
interesting. So he was able to see them as well.
Yeah. They had they were in on the island of Gamora. This is a island that was first created in the Authority series.
Okay.
And now that all the Wildstorm universe is now part of the DC universe, it exists there. Except as I've been reading this, you know, lead up, Justice League lead up to Trinity War Forever Evil, I dovetailed into a bunch of places, like Team 7, where I find out that Kaizen, Gamora, who was a villain in the Authority series, is now the sometimes referred to as the Kaizen of Gamora, and sometimes Kaizen Gamora. And
so
I don't
know if it's a title
DC
or a name.
Knows if it's a title or a name. In addition, DC did something fairly smart, and their terrorist organization known as Cobra is no longer called Cobra anymore. It's called Basilic or Basilisk, which is, I believe,
Basilisk.
Basilisk. That's it. I think it's like Arabic, maybe, for snake or something, or Latin for snake. So basically, it's Cobra, but they're changing the name, so not to be confused with any G.I. Joe books. But it seems like they're on Gamora, but now Gamora's tied into having ties with Apocalypse, and it's all kind of messy. And I can't really figure that part of the DC universe out, because I don't know if that's, DC has.
that's my feeling about the DC universe in general right now. It's all kind of messy, and I'm not sure if they even know what they're doing.
Yeah.
There's some shining books there, but I mean, as a universe as a whole, I feel like they're just running off in different directions and constantly changing the direction that they're going in.
Well, I've pretty much finished the Eclipso crossover that was, in theory, really cool.
Okay.
They had the start of it. It all ran consecutively throughout a few books. And Demon Knights is where chronologically it starts, where Lucifer takes the Black Diamond out of hell and gives it to one of the members of the Demon Knights, and they bring it to the Earth. And then you see it in All-Star Western become part of the formula that Dr. Jekyll uses to create Mr. Hyde, and they fight Jonah Hex. And then, years later, you also see it in Team 7, where... How did you pronounce that?
Basilisk?
Basilisk? I gotta work on that.
It's a mythical creature. It was in the second Harry Potter book. It's like a lizard that it looks at you and you turn to stone.
Yes. So Basilisk is trying to get the Black Diamond for power. Eclipso comes out. Also, and so that's 5 years in the past. Now in the future, you see it's in Argus Black Room, where they keep all their, you know, mystical stuff, and Catwoman's trying to steal it. In addition, there's more Black Diamonds that play a part in the Amethyst storyline that's in Sword of Sorcery. And I haven't figured that out yet, I haven't finished that yet, so I don't know how that ends. But the end of Catwoman, it gets to a guy calling himself Alex Montez / Bruce Gordon, and it reads like a typo. And in addition, there was a guy called Alex Montez in Team 7 who was a scientist using the Black Diamond who died. So I'm like, what are you doing, DC? This whole crossover doesn't even make sense. And then the Earth 2 part of me says, how does Alex Montez exist on the prime Earth of the DC multiverse, because Alex Montez is, now this is where I show my DC nerdiness, Alex Montez okay. is the brother of Yolanda Montez, the second Wildcat, who was the daughter of a boxer who was friends with Ted Knight. She's
I was a fan of her as Wildcat.
Yeah, she was Ted Knight's goddaughter, I believe.
And she was in the 90s Eclipso series, like when they went hunting for Eclipso.
Right, and she was killed by Eclipso. And
yeah,
so
I was
later on,
a fan of that.
Yeah, that was an awful series. And later on, Alex Montez, to avenge his sister's death, went throughout the world, gathered every single black diamond, started destroying them, what it seemed like, and eventually you see that he's actually making tattoos over his body to control Eclipso and gain that power, but also to torture Eclipso. Eclipso ends up getting the better of him. So we've already seen the Montezes, or the older Montez in background scenes in Earth 2. So it's really interesting that Alex Montez is also on Earth Prime. Anyway,
here's a question for you.
That was a long, long story about how awful that was.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if this makes the DC Universe make more sense or even less sense.
Yeah. So what was your question?
Do you wish the New 52 never happened?
No. I like the New 52. I like what Marvel did better with the All New Now.
Okay.
But there are parts of it where, like, it seems haphazard. And you know, when you start your line over to create something new and something very reader-friendly, I think that's a great thing. But in execution, if you don't make it reader-friendly, then, you know, you lost the power of the New 52, what it was. And I think especially when you get into the second level, third level books such as Sword of Sorcery and Team 7, and it seems like they're not watched over, or I don't know, because you know, everything you hear from DC is that they over editorialize everything. They not editorialize, but they over edit stuff, where you go, well, this has to fit into this and this has to fit into that, which a lot of or maybe it is that, and it ends up not making sense because someone writes something and they want it to go back and fit it into this puzzle piece that it doesn't really fit into. So I think maybe that's some of it. For as clean and easy as they want to make it, it's not. I mean, right off the bat, DC put out all these all the books that they had government organizations in it. There's nowhere.
Right.
There's Argus. There's the DEO. There's Team 7, which is some other secret organization. There's Star Labs. There's Cadmus. There's, you know, like, I don't even know where to look. Let's not forget Shade in Frankenstein.
Hmm.
Why do you need Shade when you have Argus that has a black room? I don't get it. But
that's a good point.
You know, it seems like a lot of the streamlining didn't really happen.
That's, yeah. Yeah, I feel like they were trying to streamline the continuity, and it just instead has exploded. And it seems like they just keep trying to put a new patch over something that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I think a lot of the stuff in Team 7 with Basilisk, mm-hmm. did I say it right?
Yes. Yeah, you did. Good job.
All right. Is going to play out in that Future's End book.
Mm.
You're going to see that. So I'm interested to see that, because I think a lot of the stuff which isn't working is the Wildstorm stuff, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think they're going to keep trying that, to fit that into the DC Universe until it works, or until Jim Lee isn't the head of DC Comics, or one of the heads of DC Comics.
Right.
Because those are his babies, so, I mean, they're going to keep trying with those.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, did you see this announcement for this new Teen Titans Earth One graphic novel?
Yes. Not a lot of information, except that Jeff Lemire is writing, who I love. And
Terry Dodson's doing the art, who I love.
And I love as well. Yeah. Looks great.
I can't wait for this. What's really cool about it, in my opinion, is that the kids' sidekicks aren't there. It's basically the 1980s Wolfman Perez Teen Titans team, but without Robin, Speedy, Wonder Girl.
Yeah.
Aqualad.
I read a tiny bit of a description of why that team was chosen.
Right.
And they said on Earth One, everyone is so young that there are no sidekicks. You know, like, there's no sidekicks yet. So, you know, Superman, Batman, they're like 21, mate, you know, at most, you know. So these kids are like 16, you know, and there's no such thing as a sidekick yet. So there's not going to be a Robin or a Wonder Girl or, you know, Supergirl, I guess, you know, because we haven't even seen Wonder Woman yet. But that looks really good. And apparently that will be the only Earth One book that will come out this year, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess Yannick Paquette, who is doing the art on the Grant Morrison Wonder Woman Earth One graphic novel, that won't come out till 2015, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And they're looking to get on a schedule with the Earth One books where you'll see one a quarter.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Because it seems like they're doing one a year, basically.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're slowly launching it, but I think they're looking to get, like, a couple, you know, a couple books released a year. So, you know, I think it's going to be Wonder Woman. Then you'll see another Superman book. Shane Davis won't be doing the art. Somebody else will be.
And then, yeah, I noticed that.
And then you'll see another Batman Earth One with Geoff Johns and... I'm blanking on the guy's name.
Gary Frank.
Yes. And, yeah, so then I don't know what they have in store after that, but, you know, I'm hoping for Green Lantern, Flash, you know, Aquaman, see what they could do with those guys.
Yeah, I never read the Superman ones, but I'm really excited for this Teen Titans one. It looks really cool. I can't wait.
The Superman one is good.
Okay.
I didn't read Volume 2, Volume 1. It's you know, it's a good introductory Superman book for anybody who has not read Superman before, and that's about it.
Yeah, and Batman Earth One was great. Gary Frank, to me, if he's working with Geoff Johns, it's like if Ivan Reis is working with Geoff Johns, I'm buying that book.
Yeah,
the two of them, and they're just a great team together.
There are a couple artists that I think Geoff Johns works great with, and those two people are one of them. I really love when he works with Rags Morales as well.
Okay, yeah, I'd add Doug Monke to the list, who he worked with on Green Lantern for so long, after around the time of Blackest Night and thereafter.
Yeah, and Ethan Van Sciver.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right, well, do you have any other news to check out, or is that bringing us to the end of the podcast?
That's pretty much it. I'm still continuing with my Justice League read, and I am developing theories on how deities work in the new 52.
Okay, cool. I can't wait to hear about this. And hopefully maybe next week we'll get into deities in the new 52 DC universe.
Yep.
So listeners, you have that to look forward to next week, as well as, you know, our picks for new comics coming out on April 9th. Oh, look, I did that again.
Wow. What is that going to be, our second podcast?
That'll be our 14th podcast. It's amazing. You do one a week. They add up very quickly.
Yeah. Sorry, Billy and Brian show.
By the way, the Billy and Brian show definitely still has more episodes. I think we're up to episode 25 on that one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Well,
but
look
that.
out, Billy and Brian show.
And another thing I'm looking forward to this week, I believe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is finally returning. I really love that show.
Yeah, with Deathlok, right?
And I just read that Amy Acker has been cast. She's going to play the mysterious celloist that has been hinted at, Coulson's love interest. Amy Acker's a big Whedon use alum, so that.
Is Amy Acker related to Ben Acker?
I'm not sure. I don't know. They might be married. They might be brother and sister. I have no idea, to be honest with you. She is gorgeous, though.
I do not know who she is, though it does sound very similar to the Heroes character in the third season of Heroes, who played a violin and stopped time, or I forget what it was. That was when Heroes was awful.
Right. I don't believe she's going to have any powers. I think she's
Okay.
just going to be Coulson's love interest that was hinted at in Iron Man 2.
Oh, okay.
Okay, she is married to. She is not married to Ben Acker.
All right. Heard it here, not first.
Yeah. She's married to somebody else.
All right.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. And we will see you guys, or well, you'll hear us again next week, and we'll be talking more comics.
Take care, guys.
All right, have a good day, Dave.